Okay, text 40. Yasya prabha prabhavato jagananda koti koti shvasheshva shudari vibhuti binnam tad brahma nishkalamananta sheshabhutam govindamari purusham tamaham bhajami. So it's a very systematic presentation Lord Brahma is giving of the philosophy. He's beginning, in other words, if you want to analyze something, well, you start from the beginning and then go out from there. So the first point, you know, in the beginning, there was God. So the first thing is, verse 39, there's Krishna. And these verses explain how Krishna is the basis of everything. So they start off with, well, there's Krishna, Krishna's form. He's the original Ramadi Murti Shukala Niyamena Tishtan. That all the other forms are simply expansions of Krishna. So, there's Krishna. Then he expands into these different avatars. Das avatars, Lila avatars, Vaibhava avatars, so many avatars. Okay. Now, what's the next thing? Well, the next thing is the effulgence surrounding those forms of Krishna, or that effulgence, that Brahma Jyoti. So that's this verse, verse 41. That Krishna is the basis of all these transcendental forms, or of Godhead, of Bhagavan Rup, Bhagavan Sarup. And he's also the source of the Brahman effulgence, or what's sometimes called the Brahma Jyoti. So Lord Brahma is establishing this point of the Siddhanta, or the Tattva. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, whose effulgence is the source of the non-differentiated Brahman mentioned in the Upanishads, being differentiated from the infinity of glories of the mundane universe, appears as the indivisible, infinite, limitless truth. Also, this particular verse 40 also ties in with verse 34. You can read on your own if you want to pursue the more understanding of Brahman. The verse 34 of the purport explains something about this also. I'll read the purport. Purport to text 40. The mundane universe created by Maya is one of the infinite external manifestations accommodating space, time, and gross things. So another way this can be said, all the material universes created by Maya are but one-fourth of the majesty of Govinda, known as Ekapad Vibhuti. Second sentence. The impersonal aspect of Godhead, the non-differentiated Brahman, is far above this principle of mundane creation. So, another way to say that is the non-differentiated Brahman, or the Brahma Jyoti, is a far superior truth to this Mayic fourth, or this one-fourth of Krishna's Aishwarya expansion, which is known as this material creation. But even a non-differentiated Brahman is only the external effulgence emanating from the boundary wall, of the transcendental realm of Vaikuntha, displaying the triquadrantal glory of Govinda. The non-differentiated Brahman is indivisible. Hence, it is also one without a second and is the infinite and residual entity. So I'm sure that's clearly understood. It can also be said, Brahman is an effulgence situated as the outer wall of the spiritual world, the transcendental world, which constitutes three-fourths of Govinda's Aishwarya, known as Tripad Vibhuti. The Brahman effulgence of Krishna is indivisible, one without a second. So, this is, there's some notes we have on this one about Brahman. This is a very nice description given in Bhagavatam, which we kind of collected to give us some idea. Just as Krishna, or the Supreme Lord, is spiritual, the rays of his transcendental body are called Brahma Jyoti. is spiritual effulgence. Everything that exists is situated in the Brahma Jyoti. But when the Jyoti is covered by illusion or maya, or sense gratification, then that is known as material. The Brahma Jyoti is the covering of the internal potency. The Brahma Jyoti is spread unlimitedly everywhere in all directions, but the material world is just a covered portion of an insignificant part of that Brahma Jyoti. So where is the Brahma Jyoti? It's located beyond the material nature, but outside of Vaikuntha region. The Brahma Jyoti is sometimes called Siddhaloka or Brahmaloka. The Brahma Jyoti is like homogeneous or homogeneous sunshine, and the Krishna is the sun. According to one's realization and devotion, development of consciousness, one will see either Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan. That verse is there in first canto. Vedanti tat tatva vidas yat taj gyanam advayam. Brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan tishabhyate. So learned sages who have understood the nature of the absolute truth from the topmost perspective have concluded that the absolute truth is one that has three features: Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. So if our perception has not evolved very much, we will emphatically stop at level one and say, God is Brahman. Right? Jagan Mithya, Brahman Satya. If Brahman is truth, then everything else is false. And there's nothing more than Brahman. But that is considered the neophyte realization. The shining light of Brahman is but a potency, and it depends on the omnipotency of the Supreme Lord. And in Bhagavad Gita 14, chapter verse 27, Krishna says, Brahmano hi pratishtaham. Aham, I am the source, pratishta, I manifest, or I am the source. I have established that Brahman effulgence. So then who realizes Brahman? It's a very nice phrase. It says that those persons who are beginners in spiritual advancement, they realize the Brahman. Kind of sounds interesting because I don't know how many devotees in the room are Brahman realized. Of course, our ultimate realization is not for beginners, it's the topmost. But the Brahma-Bhuta Prasannatma, the one who has realized Brahman, Brahma-Bhuta Prasannatma na sochati na kanchati, samasraveshu bhuteshu mad bhaktim labhate param. Brahman is where, that's the beginning of where bhakti can begin. When we come to the transcendental platform, then pure bhakti begins. And that means developing these symptoms or characteristics of the Brahman realized soul. Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma, Prasan Atma. You know that verse, anyway, what that all means. So the Acharyas cite that in the beginning, those that were beginners in self-realization, like the four Kumaras, Bilvamangala Thakur, and Sukadev, they were Brahman realized. And later, they got attracted to the beautiful transcendental form of Bhagavan, Sri Krishna. Devotees don't like this level of realization. They don't like this Brahman effulgence. And Isa Upanishad, there's a nice verse in verse 16, where the devotees are praying to the Lord, hey, take this out of here. Get this out of here. It's like if someone, say someone comes to you in the middle of the night and they shine a big light in your eyes. Huge light, like a policeman sometimes does. So you're sleeping in your room and they shine a big light and you say, who is it? I can't, turn that off. Who is it? Who is it? And you feel frightened and disturbed. And, if you're a married person, maybe you're a wife, and if weren't in that situation, you'd think, you're very attracted, your wife is very pretty or whatever. But with this light, you say, turn off that light, I can't see who it is, remove. So in the East Upanishad, in the 16th, he's saying, please remove your transcendental rays so I can see your beautiful form of bliss. So that's the devotees. But the gyanis and the yogis, they sift through all the Vedas, searching everywhere and negating everything. Neti, neti. The absolute is not this and not that. Within their intellect, they conclude that reality is permanent. This is what they conclude. With their intelligence, they analyze everything, the gyanis and yogis. The reality is permanent. And since all the forms that we see in this material world, they are temporary or impermanent, therefore, I conclude with my rational intelligence that the absolute truth, which is eternal and permanent, must be formless. Right? First of all, they establish that reality is eternal. Right? Reality is permanent, eternal. So then they examine everything in this world and they say, well, this is not reality. This is not spiritual. The spiritual reality, it is temporary. Is impermanent. So therefore, and because the forms of this world are also temporary and impermanent, then the absolute must be formless, because the world is full of forms, and everything comes into being, it stays for some time, and then it dwindles and vanishes, basically. We don't see anything lasting forever. So this is their incomplete realization. So Krishna explains that this is one who doesn't really have knowledge. They say, I'm a jnani. I'm a knowledgeable person. Or I'm a great yogi, self-controlled yogi. But Krishna tells that actually you're not so smart. Bahunam janmanamante gyanavamam prapadyante. After many births, keep going. It's a good idea that you think that the Absolute is Brahman, but you have to go further than that. Take another birth and another birth and another birth. Then you realize that Vasudeva Sarvamati, that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has a transcendental form and transcendental qualities beyond this limited world, and He's eternal. And he is everything. Sarvamati, He is everything. And then you surrender unto Him. And then you attain the highest perfection. So Arjuna, in chapter 12 of Krishna, of Bhagavad Gita, he asks Krishna, who's more perfect? Krishna says, the bhaktas, because the meditators and impersonals, they simply undergo lots of trouble. So Jiva Goswami in Bhagavad Sandarbha, he gives a nice definition. He says, realization of the impersonal Brahman means realization of Krishna minus his form and personality. That's a really kind of humorous definition, actually, if you have a kind of a philosophical sense of humor. It says realization of Brahman or the Brahmajyoti is realization of Krishna. You've realized God. You've realized Krishna. There's only a couple of things missing. Krishna's transcendental personality and his transcendental, what does it say, form, right? Yeah, his transcendental form and personality. And who would want to miss that? Anyone has even an inkling or a drop of realization of Krishna's form or his personality, he couldn't think, you know, he would be foolish to consider that Brahman is, you know, satisfactory. So who realizes Brahman? Demons get liberation, but their liberation, it means merging into the Brahmajyoti. It's not the same as devotees who get liberated to Vaikuntha. This is like the difference between entering a kingdom and entering the palace of the king. A nice analogy, Acharyas give. If you get liberation, you go into Brahman, that's like the kingdom. Okay, I'm in India, you know, I'm in India, or say there's this vast kingdom with thousands of acres of forest, so somehow you've landed in the forest and you say, oh, I'm in Bharat's kingdom, I'm in his forest. Really, what's the pleasure there? Oh, there's lots of trees and lots of insects and you know, really. But if someone's in the palace living with the king and so much variety and entertainment and eating and all kinds of wonderful relationships and friends and family, there's so much more pleasure. So this is compared to being in the palace is being compared to realizing the form and personality and living personally with Krishna, one of his planets, in a service relationship. So Yudhisthira asked Narada, how the demon Shishupal got the heart to attain liberation? So, one who meditates upon Krishna gets a result according to their level of contemplation. So Shishupal got liberation to Brahmajyoti because he meditated on Krishna in anger. Kamsa meditated on Krishna in fear. Demons achieve liberation to the spiritual effulgence, but not the blissful spiritual planets of Vaikuntha. And they must return to the material world. Another analogy, a plane might fly in the sky, but it can't land without some shelter. If it's flying around and it can't find any airport, like these terrorists, they fly around and they want to land somewhere, and they say, no, you can't land here. And they go somewhere else. So the same thing, the yogis or jnanis who fly around in the sky, they fly in the spiritual sky of Brahmajyoti, but it's not a very, they can't be satisfied there. So, aruya krichena param param param, patantiyado natritayushmarangraya. They explain the Bhagavatam and they again come down and land their feet on the ground of the material world. And as Prabhupada said, because they want activity. They come from the zone of no activity, of the Brahmananda, the bliss of no activity, and the bliss of merging in the Brahman, these great yogis and gyanis. So they come out of that plane of merging, and then they come in, of non-action. Then when they come back to this world and again take a human form, maybe in a Brahmin family, and again take up self-realization, and again take up the same path which they have samskaras and, you know, they have this inclination for, they go in again to this Mayavadi impersonal line, but then they get into a whole line of action. Prabhupada says they come from the plane of inaction and engage completely in the plane of action. They open hospitals and schools and do so much welfare work, which is quite opposite, is quite mundane. So then the happiness of Brahman, we've heard time and again that padam padam vatsapatam param padam, that the water and the footprint of a calf, a little tiny calf, and it walks in the mud, and then it rains and leaves a little bit of water. That's compared to the bhakti rasa amrita sindhu, the ocean of nectar that's available when one attains the threshold of pure bhakti. Threshold of pure bhakti means sakti and bhava bhakti. So that's compared to an ocean. But this is very rarely given. This is very rarely awarded. Krishna easily gives the happiness of Brahman and merges demons. Even demons, they get to Brahman, yogis, gyanis. But to attain Krishna's pure love is very rare, because if Krishna gives his love, because love is a personal exchange between two. So when one gives their love, then if they give their love to someone, then they become controlled. Because giving love means giving everything. This is the perfection of love, is to give everything, body, mind, and words. And the greatest lovers of the Lord are the gopis of Vrindavan, because they gave their words, mind, heart, body, everything for Krishna's pleasure. But when you offer everything to Krishna like that, then Krishna becomes controlled. And then when you offer, because yayatamam prapadyante, if you offer everything to Krishna, then he's compelled and attracted to give everything to you. And then once you give everything to him, then you... Just as we don't want to give everything to Krishna, because if we surrender everything to Krishna, then he controls us. But then when we surrender everything, then he gives everything, and then he becomes controlled, because love becomes the controller. Prema becomes the dance instructor, and prema is making Radharani dance, and prema is making Krishna dance. So when one gives everything to the Lord, then the Lord gives everything to the devotee. So this is, why is prema considered to be the greatest quality of God? Because God himself, who is the greatest, most powerful, omniscient, omnipotent, and supreme controller and the cause of all causes, he becomes controlled by pure bhakti, prema of his surrendered devotees. Just see, he who controls everything becomes controlled by love. So that's why it's told that love is the greatest power in the universe. And Srimati Radharani is the perfection of that love. And she totally controls Krishna with her love. The sum total of all the Brahman effulgence cannot equal a ray from the toenail of Srimati Radharani. A ray of from her toenail, because her toenails are compared to be like sparkling rubies or like shining full moons emanating a soothing glow. Aparasiddhi Riddhi Digda Sat Padangalinake. Radha Kripa Kataksha. Aparasiddhi Vridhi Sat Padangalinake. That her naka, her nails of Padangali, of her lotus feet, they emanate unlimited benedictions and unlimited powers and mystic potencies are all there. So the whole Brahman effulgence, which is so shiny and so vast and so powerful, doesn't even equal one tiny little ray from one little toenail of Srimati Radharani. Shri Krishna Bhagavan ki jai, Radha Shyam Sundar ki jai. So that's a little bit about Brahman. Anyone has questions about Brahman effulgence? If it comes to the level of Brahman, then it should also be experiencing some qualities. Prasanatma, nasochati, nakankshati. Because the rays of the Lord's body, the Brahman effulgence, they wash the soul. Because when the soul is traveling beyond the coverings of the material world and going back to the spiritual world, he passes through the Viraja River. And the Viraja River washes the soul. And then finally enters into the Vaikunthas. According to his development, he'll land in a particular position, either in Jyoti of the Lord or Vaikuntha or Brajagokul, according to his practices. But as we approach closer to the Lord, then the soul also becomes washed by the purifying practices of bhakti yoga. As we hear, the transcendental fire, transcendental knowledge burns up all the seeds of karma. Right? We'll get to that verse also. And when the soul is washed, when the calm and crowed and low is washed, just like you take a bath and you get washed, then you see the dirt is gone. So one of the symptoms that one is actually starting to bathe in the sunshine of the Lord's Brahman effulgence, because Brahman effulgence is full knowledge, is that one does not no longer sochiti na kankshati. He doesn't hanker and lament. Right? Well, as long as we have so much hankering for things that we don't have, or lamenting over things we've given up or lost or separated from, that means we haven't been washed, we haven't been bathed by the rays of the Lord's Brahman effulgence. So the Brahma-Bhuta Prasanatma, what does speak of become joyful? The soul becomes extremely joyful, just like if it's been dark for days and days and days, and it's winter time and there's clouds everywhere and no sunshine. People become very unhappy, the mind becomes very dull, because sunshine enervates or enthuses the mind. So then all of a sudden the sun comes out. When people go out in the sunshine, they feel so open and so bright, so and joyful also, they feel happy. So as one advances in Krishna consciousness, this is part of what it means to realize Brahman. Because someone says, what does it mean? How does the devotee realize Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan? So this is part of what I'm saying, is that as Krishna explains it, this is what it means. Brahma-bhuta prasanatma na sochati na kankshati. As we're approaching the level of becoming mad-bhaktim, as we're approaching the level of becoming Krishna's devotee and qualified to render pure devotional service, or prema-bhakti, mad-bhaktim labhate param, right? Krishna says in this verse, the one becomes qualified, he gains the adhikar to become my devotee. Mad-bhaktim labhate param. He becomes qualified to be a parambhakta. Parambhakta means a transcendental personality, a pure devotee. So it's not all of a sudden one day you wake up, you're a pure devotee. But you approach and you become 10%, 80%, 90%, 100% pure. So, and part of that is that the soul starts to get washed and cleansed by bathing in the rays of the Lord's association through service. Hankering will stop, lamenting will stop, joy will increase more and more and more. Ram Prasanatma, joyful. What to speak of prema, you know, Brahmananda is one thing. Brahmananda, that's what Prasanatma means, the approaching the Brahmananda, and beyond the Brahmananda is the Premananda. But we're mostly covered with doubts and fears and illusions and hankerings and so much prarabdha karma that we don't know what it means to be joyful. What it means to be happy, you know, we're just fighting, you know, it's an artha nivritti. There's all these different categories, Madhurya Kadambini. We're fighting, there's like Viruddha Sankalpa, there's all these all these different stages are there. Thirst for material objects, fighting our prarabdha karma, unquenchable thirst for material attraction, it won't stop. No matter how much we chant and how much we practice, we're still thirsty for certain material sense objects. You know, imagine if you're thirsty. Thirsty means you want some water. So you drink 1 liter, 2 liters, 3 liters, 4, 5, 6, 8, 10 liters of water. Then you say, are you thirsty anymore? Yeah, yeah. My God, how much do you have to drink? So we're desirous to enjoy the things of this world. So we can gradually will come to these places of advanced, you know, these advanced stages. What's that? There's another verse. Mam chayo bichayana bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatita brahma bhuyaya kalpate. Right? So by practicing bhakti yoga, then one transcends the three modes of nature. So transcending the three modes of nature, what does that mean? Mam chayo bichayana bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatita brahma bhuyaya kalpate. Sagunantamatityata means you go beyond the gunas. What's going beyond the gunas? Means going beyond the material world. And going beyond the material world means penetrating the coverings of the universe. And penetrating the coverings of the universe means what? Entering Viraja and Brahman. And then Brahman means what? And Brahman means Brahmabhuta Prasanatma. So I mean, that doesn't mean you're going to fly out of your Brahmarundra and fly all around there, go through the coverings of the universe and come back. Just like Arjuna. Arjuna was here with Krishna, but he went out, went out of this world on Krishna's chariot and went to Vaikuntha. So Mahavishnu came back in the Krishna book. You read the story. So going out means going out, but also means going out. It's just like Gopakumar is traveling throughout the different planets of the universe. They also represent different levels of consciousness. So we have to transcend these earth consciousness, the earth plane, right? The earth and sensual plane, and the mental plane, the intellectual plane. These all have to be transcended. So that goes on right now. The soul is rising out of this body, your soul is still in the body, but it's rising through these different levels. Most people are just in their level of their platform of activity is a genital. And then a little bit higher than that, the platform of activity is the stomach. That's the whole platform of reality and activity is the stomach. A little higher than that is the platform of the heart, some compassion. But this is all sensual and bodily. Then there's the mental plane of the jnanis, and then there's the intellectual plane, and then finally, so this is all the evolution of consciousness. It goes on, even while the still embodied, while the soul is still in this body, the consciousness is evolving. To realize, because Brahman, Krishna is within us. So the Brahman is also shining within us. The soul is Brahman. Aham Brahmasmi. We say that, isn't it? Aham Brahmasmi. But our Brahman nature is covered by the seven... Our Brahman nature is covered by the seven layers of the universe represented by the material body. So as we go, as Arjuna went through the layers of earth and the horses were saying, "Oh no, I'm scared. It's dark." And he said, "Don't worry, I'll throw my chakra." If you read Krishna book, you can see. And Arjuna is on the chariot and horses were hesitating to go through the earth layer. And then 10 times thicker than that is the water layer and 10 times thicker. So what are the horses? The horses are the indriyas. Karmendriyas and Gyanendriyas are this body. Knowledge acquiring senses and working senses. And Krishna, and we're the passenger. We're the Arjuna. And Krishna's the chariot driver. And Krishna's taking the soul. He's a sarathi and he's taking us through these layers of the universe, which is his body is our universe. And then when we get out of that, then we come to the Brahman. Well, we're still in the body, but we realize the Brahman and all its different effects will take place. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatmana Sochatina Kanchati Samasavesha Bhuteshu Man Bhaktim Lavate Brahma. In the words of our illustrious liberated Guru Bhai, Gaur Govinda Swami, "Do you understand my language?" If you listen to his tapes, every 3 seconds he says, he says so much deep philosophy and everything. Then he says, "Do you understand my language, Baba? Hey, Baba, you understand my language?" It was nice to remember such a great soul that dedicated his life to his guru, and just a short span of 1976 to 1996. In 20 years of serving Prabhupada, he came in 75, 76, left this world in 96. In 20 years, he attained perfection and back to Godhead. So how many years are we practicing? Maybe more. Maybe more years than that. Maybe less. How perfect are we? So we can remember great souls like Gaur Govinda Swami, Jayananda Prabhu, Prabhupada's most famous and perfected, two perfect disciples of Srila Prabhupada, and pray to them that they will be merciful to us and don't forget us. We're down here. Remember us, we're your brothers. Don't forget your little brother. Like everyone, all your older brothers are piling onto some bus going somewhere and the bus starts to pull away. "Hey, wait for me." So all these are our family members, and so we're begging for their mercy. Kandiya, kandiya, what's it? Pache, pache. Running behind them, crying for the mercy of Krishna.